Blog Talk Radio.
Unmuted.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and once again, welcome to PWT Talks NXT. Unmuted. We went through a lot of that before the show because we did things in a slightly different way. This is, we're going to talk PWT Talks NXT for December, what is it, 16th? 2020. Wow, time's a wasting. My anniversary in 4 days, the whole Christmas thing in 9 days. We got stuff going on, folks. And NXT, was it good? I'm gonna say yes. I'm excited to be back. I missed you last week. I'm glad to be back this week, and glad to be seeing that we found a happy medium between the breakneck pace of what they want and the level. The slower storytelling that needs to be done to make a wrestling show work. So I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. So yeah, let's talk to the other guys who are here on the show and find out what they think about NXT here as 2020 finally comes to a close. Nate Lindberg, who are you?
I am at Nate Lindberg on Twitter, and I write the NXT hits and misses, which thank you, Tom, for picking up for me last week. Well, I picked up for Kelly's live report last week. My hits and misses will be up tomorrow morning-ish or something like that. I also have a YouTube channel, Deej Time, DEGETIME, where we look at role-playing games and therapy, and we're playing a game called Project Biomodus, which Tom is actually in playing with us, so check that out if you want to check out more of stuff me and Tom are in.
Yeah, Tom's here too, but you know what? I forgot that what I do now, because we only just started it and I was off last week, is talk about the main event, and then we throw to those guys. So Tom's got to sit there and wait silently, but I know he can do that because he's a patient man.
Hey,
main event,
cool.
Rhea Ripley versus Toni Storm. This got the nod over the number one contendership for the men's championship, Kyle O'Reilly versus Pete Dunne. But we ended the show with Rhea Ripley versus Toni Storm, and that is largely because there's actually a story to be told here. So Ripley and Storm, these two have taken on each other a number of times. If you've watched NXT UK, you know that this is a feud that's gone back a while. Ripley and Storm were the finalists in the first ever tournament to crown an NXT UK women's champion. Another championship that has not changed hands very many times at all. I believe we're only on the third reign right now, even now after all this time. And the first two reigns were held by the two women in this match. Toni Storm was the heavy favorite going in. She was somebody that WWE obviously likes. She has seen the semifinals and the finals of the Mae Young Classic. And she won. You thought she was going to win the tournament to crown the first ever NXT UK Women's Championship, but the heel Rhea Ripley won that, and they undercut the fact that she is a heel by doing the whole give her flowers in the ring and everything. And I'm like, she's a heel, she's good at it, just let her be. But whatever, she ends up losing the championship to Toni Storm in a few months. A year later, fast forward, you've got this main event, and the women's championship picture is very cloudy because there's a lot of people up near the top. Toni Storm wins this match with Storm Zero in 1355 because of Raquel Gonzalez storming the ring and screwing this up for Rhea Ripley. She distracted her, so I guess we're going to get another round of Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Gonzalez and the teased match between Io Shirai and Toni Storm, because Io does not like Toni, is going to be coming very soon. The only other note that I have here is I am so sick of Vic Joseph not knowing how to pronounce asterisk. That's literally the only other note I have on this match. We did get some emails. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. And I'm going to go to this email from Bruce Hazelwood. Good evening, crew. Look, I understand most heterosexual male wrestling fans like Toni Storm because of her posterior, but her character is about as bland as, well, as bland as Tegan Knox. I've never seen the appeal. Storm is a wrestler who plays at being a rocker and always has a doo-doo face lip or the kissy pouty face. Knox is the girl with bum knees who likes red wine. Cool. How would you book them to be, you know, interesting? Stay safe. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Bruce Lee, PhD from Seattle. He went harsh on this one, and I kind of get it. Tony is a lot of sizzle and a little bit of substance. But I do think they're going in the right direction with her here. I don't know that her character jives with the way they're taking her, but she's, I feel like she's got more to sink her teeth into now, and I want to see where this heel thing goes before I'm certain. As far as Tegan Knox, I feel like they were getting somewhere with her before the injury, which has always been the Tegan Knox thing. They had found a level of aggression and playfulness and sassiness to Tegan Knox right before she got hurt. And it's too bad we're not getting to see that play out, because that would be a major part of the story going on. But with her only getting there before her injury happened, it's funny that you emailed about her, and I swear she was completely out of my head for weeks. And this women's division is so strong. She's going to be fighting an uphill battle when she gets back, and no matter who the champion is at that time. So lots to unpack. Women's division stacked as always. Tom Staub, who are you and what did you think?
what gave away that I am a patient person? It's either all the 1970s German cinema I've been watching lately, or it's all those episodes of Monday Night Raw. It's one or the other. I am at Tom Staub on Twitter, and I thought this main event was okay-ish. I hesitate to criticize too much that they went with this match, because they're looking for intriguing matchups to compete with TNT, and Tony versus Rhea is absolutely that, for all the reasons that you mentioned with their history and the fact that both of them, even with all their history, they both feel like they are on the cusp of having the biggest years of their career to date in 2021. So it's intriguing, but I don't think either wrestler is one that you want to see take a fall right now. Definitely not Tony, because I feel like that would be really shooting the air out of one of her tires. But even Rhea, like, she's just giving out rubs left and right. Everybody gets to pin Rhea now. And I feel like having Rhea pinned on, even with the interference excuse, on an episode of regular NXT TV, it will take away from when Raquel pins Rhea at New Year's Evil, presumably. So I don't know. Again, I don't want to argue too much, but that was really my main takeaway from this. I understand why they did it, and you got to fill your weeks, but I'm not sure if this was the best course of action for the overarching storyline for the best of all involved. I very much appreciate the email from Doc Bruce, as I already told him personally on Twitter, because the fact that and they've highlighted it on some of her entrances. She used to highlight it in some of her moves. Tony has that look that gets her over with the heterosexual male fan base. That is absolutely an aspect of why she is so popular. I dance around it every time I criticize her. But I do think, you know, I've been over and over again, I've been optimistic about, or I've said I remain optimistic about turning her heel here, as I was optimistic about her going heel earlier in the year before the pandemic hit. Because I just feel like it'll be a more natural lane for her. And she hasn't really proven herself. She hasn't really proven me right there yet. And maybe she won't, which will be disappointing. But right now, I just feel like when the question comes up of, you know, how would we book her differently to be more effective when her character is so bland? I just think being a heel is easier. So she doesn't really need to add too much to her character, even though all she really has going for her is indeed like, hey, I like Guns N' Roses, or at least I want to act like Slash or dress like him or whatever it is. Just as long as she leans into being cocky, I think it'll be a lot easier for her to translate. So that's part of the reason why I'm optimistic. As far as Knox, that's a tougher situation because, yes, being babyface is tougher, and I'm not going to sit here and make the easy suggestion of like, oh, just turn her heel and see how it goes. We've seen so much from Knox, and so much of it is just the same story, the same sympathetic story over and over and over again. So I think I'm going to say just go ahead and play to her quirkiness. My favorite thing that I've ever seen Tegan Knox do was deliver a pizza to Mia Yim, and she had already eaten most of it. And then, like, while the pizza's sitting there, before she leaves, she's like, oh, are you going to eat that? And she asks if she can have the last slice. I just thought that was very winning. So maybe that. The other detail I'll throw out there about how would I, you know, the specific verbiage of the question is, how would we book them? Well, specifically with Tony, book her to win. Like I said, I don't want Tony taking pinfalls right now. I think that she is on the cusp of a major career resurgence right now after being dormant during the pandemic. And I don't want to see Tony losing too much because I think that she might have that belt around her waist soon.
Yeah, I certainly think that Tony, with any losses right here, is going to absolutely destroy her. They've just gone through so much work to bring her to the fore. The bringing her back and then turning her heel in quick succession, losing a couple times on top of this, is the kind of thing that could really damage her right now. She's a now or never kind of character. I don't know if she needs to win the championship. It is a very, in the days when the women's division was very small, I would have said, yeah, she needs to win it now or else she's going to be suffering in that space for a long time. But it's a larger division and maybe she can get away with it for longer. But yeah, make hay while the sun shines, as I say sometimes. Nate, on the main event.
So I pretty much agree with more or less everything you guys are talking about already. I kind of think the match itself was fine. It wasn't anything groundbreaking. Certainly wasn't the best I've seen out of either one. It wasn't the worst either. I think Tony looked a lot better here. I mean, we've talked about in the past, you know, her not being the best necessarily in the ring. I think at least tonight, I thought she looked pretty good. I kind of agree with Tom. He said that she hasn't really kind of proven herself to get here yet. And in a way, I kind of feel like that is the case. Yeah, maybe if you talk about NXT UK, and that's, I guess, kind of canon in the NXT world, but it's also kind of not at the same time. So she just hasn't really had a very dominant NXT run, especially with this long absence where I feel like she's kind of earned the spot. However, that said, I at the same time, I think she's also somebody that, you know, that the brand can kind of build around. And it's kind of touching into Bruce's email. You know, yes, her character is kind of bland, but her character isn't necessarily for us. I feel like her character is kind of like Shotzi's character. It's really more for kids, the younger audience. I think they would probably gravitate to her a lot more than the older male audience. Kind of my guess. But I think she also has an appeal to you know, older men as well. Not older men, but older audience members as well, not just children. But I kind of think that that's really where her fan base is probably going to be anyway. So it's kind of always the thing. Wrestling's for everybody. It's not always for us. And I know, you know, Wade talks about that a lot. He's got to kind of, you know, look at wrestling through the lens of, okay, this might not be for me, but it's probably, you know, is this for somebody else? And I think that's kind of where I am with Toni Storm at this point. I'm okay with the character. I mean, certainly not my favorite on the roster by any stretch, but I don't dislike her. I don't dislike the character. I think there's a lot of potential there. And I think that she's got a lot of potential as a main roster, a main event type player, and eventually a main roster player, with kind of the act that she has, as bland as it might be. I think it might actually work. So, what else? There was something else that I wanted to touch on. I forget. Yeah. With this here, I do think that Toni Storm is, it kind of does look like it might end up being her that goes over Io Shirai. I'm still not 100% sold on the idea, because like I was saying earlier, it kind of doesn't seem like she's earned the spot yet, but it almost kind of feels like it's, I want to say it's almost time for Io to lose the title, but she's had it for a while, and it's, she hasn't had like she hasn't had like a singles feud for it for a while. She was involved in War Games. It's kind of just been a lot of, it's been a very busy division right now. So it almost kind of just feels like it's time for a switch or a change, or at least that's how I feel about it tonight. Ask me tomorrow, might be different, but it's at least how I feel about it tonight.
Yeah, Toni is in a weird spot where it's easy to say that maybe she hasn't earned it yet, but if she doesn't take it now, then we're never going to feel like she earned it.
Right.
One of those, if she wins it, then she deserved to win it. I don't know. It's a weird time for her, and I don't know that that's who I'd go with, but if you are going to get any money out of her at all, then sooner better than later, I guess. But that is your main event scene for the women. That's not all of your main event scene for women. There's a lot going on. It's just funny to me that Io Shirai is champion at such an awesome, awesome time for the women's division. Not that the women's division hasn't always been good in NXT, because it has, but she's champion at such a great time for the division. And she's not, I don't want to say she's an also ran, but she's not getting the focus that some of the other women are. And I guess that's unfortunate, but yes, she, I don't know. I don't know what my point is. I only know that I love Io Shirai and I want to see her in a feud. I also love phone calls from our listeners. This is, you can call us at 515-605-9345 and bother us with questions, because then we can talk about the rest of the show. So we've talked main event, but let us go to the phone lines. Let's talk to Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, what did you think of tonight's show?
Okay. How you guys doing? And tonight's show was pretty good. Pretty decent show. I ain't gonna say it was one of the best or one of the worst. It was a pretty decent show to build off of.
Yeah, I agree. I like this show pretty well. It's been interesting these last 6 to 8 weeks or so, or maybe longer, and I'm just finally getting used to it. Pacing changes, a lot of changes in what NXT is meant to be. But I felt tonight like I thought they really were finding a happy medium and working towards feuds without going too breakneck and without hot-shotting things.
Yes, I thought that also. And you got some builds that you see developing, and which could probably end whenever the next pay-per-view happens. And you have some builds that could happen down the line, which would go with my first question. I like what went on with Tommaso Ciampa. I like that he brought the chair out and put the shirt on it, because he anticipated Timothy Thatcher coming out there. I like the match that he had. I even like how the match turned when Timothy Thatcher came down there, and how the guy, Tyler Rex, I don't know how to say the last name or how they said it, but I like all of that right there. And I also like the small tease that they've been doing that I don't know if it was Tom or you, Kelly, the one who caught it with Michael Bivens, a few episodes ago, a few weeks ago, he did with that, and that came at the end of that. How did you guys like all of that, and what do you guys think about that with Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa and the build that they did afterwards with Michael Bivens? Because I think that's just something that they could build down for. This could be the build for something for that for 6 to 8 months down the line.
Okay. So, oh man, what a wealth for me here, because I like Ciampa a lot, and I always have. I love Tyler Rust, formerly known as Russ Taylor, and he's had some other names on the indies, but this is a guy I have seen a lot recently, very recently. He was on New Japan Strong. He did 4 or 5 matches there. I saw all of them, and I was telling these guys on the show very recently that that I love this guy, and I can't believe he hasn't been utilized more. When he was just standing in the corner a couple of shows ago, it didn't occur to me who this was. But he's had awesome matches on New Japan Strong recently. So seeing him last week, watching last week's show just earlier today, because that's when I got to see it. I was very excited to see that this was the rangy, mean, stiff Russ Taylor becoming Tyler Rust. And Tyler Rust is a better name than Russ Taylor, because Tom and I will both tell you that having the T bump up against the T in a name like Rust Taylor just doesn't work. 12:23, Tommaso Ciampa beats Tyler Rust 12 minutes, 23 seconds with Willow's Bell. Malcolm Bivens comes out and he insists that he be Tyler Rust's new manager. That gives him the fist bump. And as a guy who absolutely adores both Malcolm Bivens and Tyler Rust, I'm just going to tell you, you're going to be so tired of me and how much that I love this act, because I'm going to love this on the level of Dakota Kai, Kushida, Cameron Grimes. This is an immediate new favorite for me. A really, really strong match with Ciampa and Rust in 12:23. The fourth longest match on the show, but the one that I will probably take with me the longest, Tom.
Indeed, abutting consonants are the worst, and abutting vowels aren't too much better. Not only was this the best thing on the show, and I had the same thought, that it's promising enough that I feel like this is the thing that this episode of TV will probably be remembered for. There will be a reason to go back to this episode to see this debut match for him. I guess I already stated it in so many words, but not only was this the best thing on the show, it was the most head-turning thing that we've seen on NXT in a while. They did an excellent job of featuring Rust in a way more than, I would argue better than they've done with Leon Ruff. I would argue definitely more than they did with Austin Gray or anyone else that was a 2020 signee that they've recently been pumping out onto TV. This was a clear signal that this is a guy to watch, and not just because he went a while with Ciampa, because the match was actually really good, and Ciampa kept looking back into the ring like, oh, wow, really, really put over the effort that Rust put in against Ciampa there, even if he needed the distraction from Thatcher to get a little bit of an upper hand going into the commercial break. Just the fact that this match got a commercial break. And yes, completely echo what you said about Malcolm Bivens. I think that, marrying the in-ring talent with Bivens' talent on the microphone is just extremely promising heading into the new year. So I'm definitely all about that side of it. And as for Ciampa and Thatcher, I thought it was, fully, fully expected, as we predicted last week, that Thatcher would continue to, these guys would continue to come down to ringside to watch each other's matches, and that it would be Thatcher's turn to be at ringside this time. So the fact that Ciampa anticipated that and brought the chair out, I thought was a nice touch. And at this point, I'm just waiting for them to decide that they're BFFs and enter the Dusty Classic together.
Yeah, I actually thought that might be where these guys were headed after their match at TakeOver and after the respect look afterwards. wouldn't be surprised if that's where this goes, because these are the two old men sitting out on their chairs outside and bemoaning the state of the youth today. That is what should be happening here. If I can just put over Ciampa in a way that, I mean, everything puts over Ciampa, but just his passion for NXT and his, the fact that he's going to go out there and get everybody over, and his insane passion for the brand and what they're doing. I adore Ciampa for everything that he's done for NXT, and this interesting, weird new chapter for him where he could easily be a main eventer, but he's doing this for a while. Very cool stuff. Very interesting, weird stuff. I know that you got to take a break from the main event, and that's what he's doing right now, but I don't know that as many top guys would be up for this part, this role, as Ciampa is. Let me not undercut what he's doing.
Absolutely. I appreciate you highlighting that. And obviously his, you know, his character of targeting different newer people in the locker room is geared toward that. But it really is indispensable to look at that side of things, because obviously, you know, as we both stated, Rust completely held up his end of it. But this match was not just good, it was believable. Even though it's an NXT newcomer coming in and taking on somebody who has like the most credibility in NXT out of almost anybody that's been in NXT. It's not somebody with the presentation and the dominant look of a Karrion Kross coming in and making quick work of Ciampa. It's a newcomer. And Ciampa, his side of it, his side of the match just made it feel like Rust belonged in there going the length that they did. And that I wasn't sitting here looking at like, oh, NXT gave him this much amount of time. I was into the contest. So, rare stuff.
Yeah. And the announcers not going the direction of this kid, this newcomer, they said this is a guy who's a 15-year veteran. He is a 33-year-old guy. He's been out there overlooked for my money. So they told that story, and very, very interested to see what they do with Tyler Rust, because I think that this is a huge diamond in the rough. Nate.
I agree. And I mean, I don't really know much about him. I think when he showed up last week, you know, I did a little bit of, Googling on him or anything, stuff like that. But I didn't really think too much about him. I didn't watch any of his matches. I just kind of think I looked at like a Wikipedia page or something like that. But it wasn't like I really like did a whole lot of research on him. And, when you said earlier today, like, he was really somebody to look at, somebody to watch, I was like, okay, all right, cool. Like, if this is something Kelly's saying, I'll go with that. And he certainly came off like that even before you said something. Tonight, you said earlier today you were going to be bragging and bragging about being right before you were right, and you certainly deserve it, because I was really impressed with what I saw, and like you said just now, commentary really put him over too. That was something that I picked up on right away. Wade Barrett came out, they said he was a 15-year vet, 33-year-old guy, and that's not something that they typically do. I feel like even with Leon Ruff. Now, granted, they were probably trying to downplay Leon Ruff, because he's going to win the title. But even with like Leon Ruff, they didn't kind of like play him up like that. They don't normally do that with a newcomer to the roster like this, and they did. And I feel like he backed it up. He went toe to toe with Ciampa. It got the commercial break, like you said. So overall, thumbs up here for me. I really dug it. Really enjoyed it. The thing with Malcolm Bivens at the end, I also am really, really intrigued to see where this goes. This is now the third time that they've kind of had this interaction here. And, it kind of makes sense. One of the things that I talked about last week is, where's Indu's chair? And, something that I read, I'm not sure if this is necessarily confirmed. It was just, something I saw on Reddit somewhere. But, Indu's chair is probably going to be debuting in NXT India when that becomes a thing, and I can imagine Malcolm Bivens not wanting to stick either him not wanting to stick with that and going over to India, or you know, the company wanting him to stay here, or what have you. So it kind of makes sense that now, you know, Malcolm Bivens is kind of given something else to do other than, you know, be the managers, the handlers for Indy's chair. So I'm intrigued by it. I'm kind of wondering if, you know, I mean, whatever happened to Robert Stone. I couldn't even think of his name for a second. You know, whatever happened to Robert Stone? I feel like, you know, if the Robert Stone brand ever came back, like, you know, Malcolm Bivens has a brand or a stable or something. You kind of have like a, you know, an interesting, I don't want to say undercard, but you kind of have like an interesting undercard feud or something there. You know, even or even if it's not the case, you know, you know he's just he's a manager and he's, you know, kind of plays like a Paul Heyman type character for Rust. You know, I'd be totally down with something like that. But wherever it goes, I'm on board because, you know, like you said, Kelly, I'm a fan of Bivens. I am a new fan of Rust after tonight. So I'm on board. I'm all on board.
All right. Yes. And Robert Stone, we last saw him with Aaliyah, and I assume he still manages Aaliyah, but she's not in a big spot right now. I don't know where he's going. Interestingly, I thought of him earlier today too, but I guess nothing doing on this episode. So we will see if he shows up again soon. Darrell, what else from this week's show?
Yes. And I like how you guys described it. I felt like Tommaso Ciampa's segment was the baseline, and every week can be considered a baseline of NXT and what they can build off of as a show as a whole. And I think he keeps them true and solid. And I like what you guys also said. What made Russ feel even more important, what Michael Bivens did, is how the announcers talked about it, how they phrased him before the match, during the match, and when they came back after the break. After the match, when they were showing that with Michael Bivens, so that was much big ups and much more to look out for. And you could tell they might have something bigger for him down the road. So let's see where that goes. Now, my second question for you guys will be on the match that came up afterwards. I feel like this is the beginning of a feud that we're gonna get for one of those singles, those men title feuds. If it's North American, or if it's the NXT title. I'm thinking that it's probably North American because I can see they run it back with Kyle O'Reilly, and they have another awesome match, and then you probably have somebody win, and that's going to set up for the pay-per-view match by how they setting up that card so far. But that's something not to talk about later. But I loved everything that they did with this match. I know they had the people come out, and then you got Breezango back out there. I felt like they were setting up some type of three-way feud and with teams and stuff like that, with the tag teams, because they're going to potentially go on to another tag team who's going to win those titles. But other than that, I love how they set this up. I love how Pete Dunne and Kyle O'Reilly didn't pay attention to all the foolishness on the outside and they kept looking at each other. I love how this match was wrestled. I love how the story they was telling with each other, because this is the beginning of a feud, of a rivalry that we're going to all be blessed with once they go 100% into it and it's over a title. And I like that they let the right person win. That was Kyle O'Reilly. We can run him back with the Finn. They had the story to play off of that they can build for the next 2 weeks until New Year's Evil and things like that. How did you guys like that? What are you guys' thoughts on this in the future? Maybe for when the title is on the line for this, that feud and everything. And how did you guys like the outside? And one last thing, I'm loving what they're doing with Undisputed Era, where they're doing almost like New Japan, where a person out of the faction can challenge for the title and nobody get jealous and nobody get turned on. And everybody can have a chance to go after singles titles or whatever. And because it looks like you're going to have Adam Cole and Roddy Strong be tag teams and getting a tag team match. So I'm loving that also. And if you could speak on that, but that's me. That's my second question.
I love it. I love that you brought up New Japan there, because that is the baseline for people not getting angry automatically just because somebody else in their faction gets an opportunity. That is something that I had to recalibrate my mind for when I started watching New Japan about 3.5 years ago, is that you don't just get mad at your stablemate that got an opportunity. Like real life, even if it bugs you a little bit, he's still your guy and you're still running with him, and that is what you do. So your mid-show main event, which easily could have been the main event, one of the announcers even went full Gorilla Monsoon and said this could be a main event anywhere in the world. Well, he said it could be a takeover main event. Kyle O'Reilly versus Pete Dunne for the number one contendership. 22 minutes and 46 seconds, a lot of really believable near falls, especially because both guys could easily have won this match. Kyle O'Reilly goes over Pete Dunne with the flying knee. Lorcan and Birch, Roddy, Cole, Drake and Dane, Brizango, all involved before this match, but all of them got thrown away from ringside before this match. And I think that was just a signal to us that we could expect no shenanigans. This was going to be a straight one-on-one with a clean winner. O'Reilly in the end beats Pete Dunne. You knew they would do another O'Reilly and Finn match because the last one was kind of rushed. This one still feels a little rushed, but they got 3 weeks to make it feel like it's not. So I'm not worried about it yet. Okay. So there are two emails about this. JB from Detroit. Don't get me wrong, I love both Pete Dunne and Kyle O'Reilly, but I feel like over the years we have seen some Dunne versus some form of the UE on many occasions and in many iterations, and that includes in War Games. I understand both guys were the workhorses in the War Games match this year, but I feel like if the goal was to get Finn Kyle at New Year's Evil, we could have had a newer feeling match for the number one contenders match tonight, and we had many ways to get there. I feel like we could have had a Priest O'Reilly match tonight for number one contender and then had Cross reintroduced to start his feud with Priest. What are your thoughts? As always, love the show and go VIP. And our friend Kevin Catani said, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you all well, because I'm sure at this point in the show, we are deep into Tom and Kelly's heelness. Let me just say, what a great show. That said, I'm very curious as to what Kyle winning the number one contenders match is getting at. Are they ready to move the belt? Is Pete just not ready yet? I imagine Karrion Kross as the next big bad, but is this just as simple as a respect rematch? Thanks as always. Office hours are now over, and they actually are. Our fall term ended today. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. I do think this is as simple as a respect rematch, especially because this is not a takeover match. But yeah, let's see what the Peanut Gallery thinks. Nate, what do you think?
So you guys said that Rusty was the best thing on the show, and I think any other night it might have been. To me, this was the best thing on the show. I thoroughly enjoyed this match. Just even if you take this match in a bubble and just watch it as a match, don't even worry about the story going into it or anything. Just as a technical match, it was awesome. These are two guys that are workhorses, two of probably the most talented guys in NXT as a whole. I think it was JB said the email, we've seen, you know, we've definitely seen some incarnation of Dunne and O'Reilly in the past. But as far as I'm aware, I don't believe it's ever been in singles competition. So this was a really something I was looking forward to. I think this should have been the main event tonight. I'm usually a proponent of having the women in the main event, you know, because that, as we've discussed in the past, that's kind of been the more protected title. So I kind of feel like that's the more protected division. So I do like having them in the main event, but I kind of feel like this should have been there. I feel like it was a little bit of a bigger story, not that there really weren't stakes for the other match, the women's match, but this, you know, had the number one contender stakes, you know, here. And Yeah, I don't know. One of the other things that kind of, and this is a little bit of a tangent, a sidebar, but one of the things that bothered me about this match is the only thing that really, I guess, bothered me was there was a little bit of deception from commentary going into the match. They're like, we're going to bring this match to you uninterrupted. And they say that, right before they're going to do like the picture in picture stuff. But they've also said it in the past when they're like, don't go to commercial. Now, granted, I think when they say they're not going to commercial, they actually say they're not going to commercial break. But when they say when they said tonight they're going to bring you this match uninterrupted from bell to bell, I'm like, oh, sweet. We're not getting any commercial breaks. And we still got two commercial breaks, albeit picture in picture. And that's not usually something that like they hype up. It's like the picture in picture is just something we get you know, at least a couple times throughout the course of the night. Tonight, it might have been – no, I don't think it was the only time. I think it was a couple other – at least one other picture in picture, I think about it. But yeah, I thought it was just kind of odd that they pointed it out.
There are always two split screens, always.
Yeah.
And tonight, unless they pay for more, but generally two is the exact number. On this night, they were both during that match.
And so, okay, maybe I don't know. Maybe that's why they brought it up, but it was just something that I the way that they said it and just the way that they framed it going into the match is like I was expecting this not to have any commercial breaks at all. And it did. It had the picture in picture. And like you said, we get two a week anyway. So other than that, and that's really kind of just a nitpick thing. I didn't have an issue with anything here. Both of these guys, you could make a case for them to go up against Finn for the title. If it wound up being done going over tonight, as I said last week, I don't really think he's got as much as I'd love to see the title around his waist, I don't see him as an NXT champion right now. Maybe somewhere down the line, but right now I don't see him as a champion. Kyle O'Reilly, on the other hand, I do. So going into this match with Balor, I'm kind of torn 50-50 here. Maybe 51-49 leaning towards Balor, but I'm not really sure yet. Yeah, we'll obviously see where things kind of fall into place as the next couple weeks pan out here. But overall, I really dug this match. Like I said, you take it even just in a bubble, you take the story away. I thought it was great. Oh, and also the tag team involvement at the beginning, like you brought up, Kelly, I think this is a great way of kind of telling us, telling the crowd that this is going to be no shenanigans. It's taking out everybody that's kind of involved in the periphery of any of the feuds going on with all the teams and the factions that these people belong to. Takes out all the involvement for everybody here. The only person that really you could even make a case to kind of run in at this point would have been Damian Priest. And that was because, he wasn't involved anywhere else in the night. He was taken out last week, but we didn't see him here tonight, and he's involved in the NXT title scene. That's really the only tie you could even make to Damian Priest here, but he was the only other person I could think of that would maybe interfere if they're still, they were still going to try and swerve us and say, okay, here, we took everybody out. You're going to get a clean finish and then, still have some sort of interference, which is something I could see them do. But obviously we didn't. We got a clean win, and that's what I want to see anyway. So thumbs up, big thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I think Kyle loses this match again. I think this is your respect rematch. And something they'll put on TV so they can push something that they think is a bigger deal down the road. But I think that O'Reilly is the kind of guy that maybe time will say they should have gone the other way and had somebody else be the stopgap so that Kyle O'Reilly could win the championship down the road. But after that awesome O'Reilly and Balor match before, which is probably, well, it's certainly top two Balor matches of mine I've seen, and I've seen a lot of them. I understand that that's where they wanted to go sooner than later. Tom, on your mid-show main event, 22 minutes, 46 seconds on a show that had 67 minutes, 47 seconds. Very heavy on wrestling, Tom.
So you noticed that Vic Joseph mispronounces the word asterisk, which also drives me crazy, of course. I noticed during this match that he kept saying the word resiliency, which is one of those new things, just like how people don't put the space in everyday anymore when it's when it's the form of that phrase that needs the space in it. You even see it on major advertisements and whatnot. People are saying resiliency. The word is resilience. You don't need the extra syllable at the end. Even Roman Reigns is saying resiliency so much now that I'm expecting it to end up on a t-shirt. But that's my Vic Joseph quibble of the week.
Hey, you want to talk about t-shirts that should be burned to the ground? Remember Raven saying, quote, the Raven, nevermore?
Oh, God.
Okay. Okay.
Oh,
I'm,
God.
Tom.
That reminds me of a meme that I should send you. Hopefully you'd find it funny. It is related. It's Poe related. Anyway, we're coming off of AEW. Not only is AEW very strong right now and it feels like an important show and they're making big moves, but we're coming off of their biggest rating of the year. And so, of course, NXT says, yeah, we're going to bring this to you uninterrupted. And when I saw that announcement earlier in the day on social media, I thought, I wonder if they're totally not going to do that. And they're just going to do the picture-in-picture thing and pass it off as uninterrupted. And sure enough, so I got to laugh out of that. Yeah, so, and I guess it is, like Nate said, I guess it's a nitpick. And if I had to nitpick one other thing, I would say that I do wish that this match had been announced sooner because it felt like it should have felt more important than it felt. but for a TV match, it was on the relative high end. It was good. I'm in a similar place as Darrell as far as thinking that this is just part of what will be an ongoing feud, not necessarily immediately, but talking about like the big picture of these guys continuing to wrestle each other over the years. And yes, like JB, I've definitely noticed that, and I've mentioned a number of times that the Undisputed Era has crossed paths with the British Collective or whatever, you know, we want to say, you know, your Trent Seven, Tyler Bate, so many times that it started to feel quite old, you know, toward the tail end of 2017, let alone now. But yeah, like Nate said, this is the first time that Kyle and Pete have been one-on-one with no frills, no, you know, ladders or, you know, everybody laying out in the other side of the ring on the War Games or whatever. So, what I'm building to with that point, sorry, there are just so many bullet points here with the emails and the questions and everything, is that I'm in a similar place as Darrell because this match felt like for the bar that it did reach, which was a pretty good one, it did feel like these guys have a much higher bar that they can go to together. And they were deliberately keeping that in their back pocket because they feel like they'll probably get, you know, bigger clashes in the future. As Darrell, you and I talked about last week, you were saying that, you were suggesting that Cross and Priest would go to New Year's Evil. And I was saying, no, we got some more weeks of TV to get through. It'll be Cross and Balor at New Year's Evil. So you were right on that one. I still think that's the trajectory that we are on. And I would not be surprised if Cross is the excuse that they give O'Reilly to lose this match at New Year's Evil. But I will say that I thought this match tonight was Dunn's to lose. I was surprised by O'Reilly's win, but happy about it because not only does the strong, clean win put over the new finish that he's been using, because there was it was a very strong, definitive win. He clearly had the upper hand at this point in the match and established that this is the move he's now using to put people away for the 1-2-3. But not only that, I would agree with Nate that Dunn does not feel like he is in, even though I'm fine with him being in the picture and I think he belongs there, I don't think he is in line to be an NXT champion right now. He just doesn't have that feel about him right now as the recent McAfee subordinate. And now this 2 weeks in a row, this week more than last, that they have shied away from mentioning McAfee at all. Interestingly, although, you know, again, I feel like he will pop up again soon enough, possibly in the Royal Rumble. So putting O'Reilly in this position does, even though I'm thinking, yeah, he'll probably lose and the belt's just going right back to Cross, it does give me pause, because I agree that Kyle feels like NXT champion material, and putting him in another match after his last showing was so impressive, and it won so many people over, it does make me wonder if I'm not reading the tea leaves correctly there. And I think the only other thing I'll add on top of all of that, yeah, the tag teams, I agree that it was just a signal that we weren't going to get any further shenanigans in the match, but that, along with the suspicion around Thatcher and Ciampa, and along with the GYV video and the very fun Ever-Rise interview that we got, we got three backstage interviews tonight and no sneak attacks. That was crazy. But I think all of that, the signal that they're really sending is Dusty Classic is probably coming up.
And it seems like they could actually justify a Dusty Classic right now. So that's very cool. JB asked about Dunn and O'Reilly feeling a little bit done to death. And I would say yes, except for the fact that I think that they get a lot of extra mileage out of turning both guys. And maybe that's just a simple parlor trick, but the fact that UE is face now and Dunn's on the other side of the aisle, for me, I think because these guys are so good, they can get away with it. And I will accept a little bit more of a feud between the two. So yeah, that doesn't bother me. Darrell, was there anything else this week?
Yes, sir. And my last thing for you guys tonight. And also, yeah, Don has faced the UE plenty of times, but they still have the one card to play because he has never faced them with his British strong style brothers. He's always been with someone else, like a Ricochet them and stuff like that. So he has yet to face them with the British strong style. So that's something that you can build to while building up Kyle and him as the lead, as two leads. Maybe Kyle defeats Karrion Kross down the line. So you never know. So that's something that could be story down the line. But okay, my third thing for tonight, and Tom stole a little bit of mine. I want to talk about all the different things that they had tonight, the good my guys and their good promo package that they had together. The backstage thing that they had with Swerve, and you can tell he's morphing into a different character. He's going into a different character. He got the gold in his mouth. He's wearing the suit. He's playing with his bracelet. So they telling you he's becoming heel, which you don't have no choice for him to come, how he lost in the championship a couple of times. So babyface run has got to be over when it comes to that. I like what Ever-Rise came out there and did, and you can tell that they setting them up as heels in that Dusty Classic if that comes up and everything of the sort. And I like the Bronson Reed packet and everything like that, even the Karrion Kross pack, two packages. And I also like the Karrion Kross match, just redefining him and putting him back and showing everybody, reintroducing him to everybody on the thing. And I like that they let him talk into the camera and introduce that match between him and Kross, Damian Priest. So I like all of that. And one other thing, I'm glad that they don't mention Pat McAfee, because I know you guys and other people were talking about how you shouldn't be able to say certain stuff like this. Being a professional athlete himself, and, you know, you have people come out and do that, he needed to take these few weeks off and stuff like that, just because that's for all the people who came out and said, well, he shouldn't be kicking out of a Panama Sunrise at 8. That Adam Cole has never pinned anybody with in NXT. So, but, you know, I like those things. How did you guys like those, all those different things and that point that I brought up at the end about Pat McAfee?
Thank you, as always, Darrell. McKenzie talks to Swerve and then Ever-Rise. And yes, okay. So I'm a big fan of Swerve. Never made that quiet. in all his iterations, Shane Strickland, Isaiah Scott, whatever. And he is somebody that I would have thought was a can't miss babyface prospect, but apparently they need to spice him up by healing him up in order to get him where they need to go next. Last week they had that match with Jake Atlas that was nice and relatively short, and he lost that, and now he's moving that way. So that is a bummer to me. I think that his best days are still ahead of him as a babyface, but I have been surprised before. I didn't know how it was going to work out when they turned Dakota Kai heel, and I love her heel act. So to hell with what I think. Anyway, yeah, good stuff here. I also want to call out, I don't know that I've done this. I really, really dig the work that Mackenzie Mitchell is doing. I think she's really good at giving and taking focus, and I have not appreciated her to this point, but I think she is really doing a good job of being an announcer with a babyface mentality who is not hitting you over the head with what she believes, but is not secretive about getting face and heel acts over. Good stuff. Tom, what do you think?
Very much agree with you about Mackenzie, and for the past couple of maybe even months now, they've given her the benefit of actually saying, like, back to you guys, you know, just or what, however she says it, throwing back to commentary rather than just staring vacantly. And I liked her pitch back tonight after she's already established that is something that she is allowed to do, unlike so many other backstage interviewers in WWE over the recent years. After the Ever-Rise after Ever-Rise jumped in to get some interview time with her, she's like, I literally have nothing to say right now. So, yeah, she's shown a little bit of personality as well. And yeah, it's funny, Darrell. When I started bleeding over into that territory, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking this feels like Darrell grab bag subject matter. I wonder if I'm stepping on that a little bit, but I'll see if I can breeze through some of these, because a lot of the stuff tonight, I won't even hit all of them, because a lot of the stuff tonight in this grab bag of just other stuff peppered throughout the show was very straightforward. Like, Bronson Reed's coming back. Okay, cool. There's not much other flavor there to dig into. I will say that Shotzi's interview was terrible. I don't even remember if she said anything of substance. Shotzi was
She did.
Very...
Okay, I have to bring this up now because we're not going to bring it up another time. It was hilarious unintentionally, the Mackenzie and Shotzi thing. She said she was so proud of her team. They almost survived War Games. It was unintentional comedy, just wonderful. In The Simpsons, there's a neighboring town that says, oh, then maybe that's why we beat them in football almost half the time. And like, he's doing it as a brag. That is exactly what I thought of when Mackenzie said, I'm so proud of my team. They almost survived War Games. Interesting way to say you lost.
I'm glad that we've got you for the Simpsons references when I'll pick up the Futurama ones. Yeah, Shotzi was terrible. And Swerve was good. It's still another very abrupt turn. Like, he showed the hint last week, and this week he's already in a completely different wardrobe and behaving a different way. I don't like those very, very abrupt turns. I like when it's more gradual. So there's that. Maybe it's a nitpick. Finn Balor already had a video package ready to go for Kyle. I'm like, okay, did you film one for Kyle and one for Pete just in case Pete won? That was a quick turnaround, but okay. Let's see, you got Dexter Lumis hosting New Year's Evil. When they started peppering that throughout the night, I was thinking, oh man, I'll bet he's hosting the damn show. But I meant it like, in my own mind, I meant it as a joke, and then here we are. And even though there are plenty logistical reasons why I can think, why I can imagine that they had him at an iPad with a stylus instead of, you know, a sketch pad on the easel and charcoal or something, whatever it is that he prefers to draw with, it's just weird that they're going to have him up there throughout the night and not have an actual sketch pad there. I know, again, logistical reasons, I could drone on about it. It's so not worth it. You're probably thinking about them already, dear listener. So I get it, but it's still just goofy that he's sitting there at an iPad with what were almost certainly pre-prepared in progress images of this. Just such a lovely little piece of art that Dexter Loomis did. What an original piece. I think Karrion Kross saying Doomsday is still coming. I appreciate that they're trying to save his Doomsday thing, but it just sounds like whose most recent divinations and calculations reading from whatever book they're reading from didn't quite come to fruition on the night that, you know, all of the cultists gathered in the park waiting for the aliens to arrive. And so now he's saying, oh, Doomsday is still coming. Don't worry. I reread the book and changed my math. So that's, I don't know. And was that, I'm sure there's one other that I'm miss. Oh, you know what? It's not worth bringing up as its own segment unless Nate has like an essay to read off about it. The Xylee and Boa thing. I was hoping that tonight was going to be the night that we were going to get them in the ring for the first time since this has started, not for any special reason, just because I'm done with these. I haven't liked any of them. They're all the same. It's just, ooh, they're training hard. It's like, okay, let's move to the next phase of this already.
Well, we did move to the next phase because we panned out and now we saw that Xayah is attacking Boa. So
it's still the same, like they're just being brutally trained.
Oh yeah. I think they're just they're trying to drag this out for maximum number of weeks, and they could have given us the information that Xayah was attacking Boa last week. I watched these shows this week's and last week's just 2 hours apart, so maybe that was part of the reason why I accepted this. But yes, we saw Xayah getting bloody attacking and Boa getting bloody being attacked last week. This week we saw that was a direct result of Xayah attacking Boa. And so it was, I guess, something. But yeah, let's take it to where it's going. Nate, what did you think?
So I don't know if I have a whole heck of a lot to add on a lot of these because I think you guys touched on most of it. But the few things that I will throw out, Swerve, I'm in agreement with Tom. I'm not a huge fan of the rapid change in his character. Last week I even said, I thought he was. He's kind of like a perfect baby face. I wasn't sure if he'd ever been, a heel anywhere else before, but I kind of feel like he was kind of almost tailor made for a baby face. And I was a little bit surprised to see, a heel turn here out of him. We saw, the signs of it last week, but really full blown here tonight, which is, I guess I'm okay with it. I'm curious to see where it goes, but it was a bit of a drastic change tonight. What else? There was there's one other thing that I wanted to say on what was the last topic you were talking about, Tom?
The Xylee and Boa.
Yeah. That's the only other thing I really wanted to touch on. Because I'm on the other side of the fence here. I like it. I've liked, and I think I might be in the minority overall on this storyline. I've said it, repeatedly now, I like honor type storylines and this is kind of in that vein. I feel like these vignettes they're getting increasingly brutal and violent. So I think we're kind of starting to come to a crescendo. My guess is we're probably going to see something either right before at or right after New Year's Evil. I don't know if it's going to be within the next, week or two. I think it'll probably be, either the week before New Year's Evil or New Year's Evil would be my guess, finally kind of, come to a head and kind of see these vignettes end. But I'm, excuse me, all of a sudden, I'm kind of like at a, I'm not sick of them yet, but I'm kind of ready for them to come to a climax, come to an end and go from there. But otherwise, yeah, I think pretty much on all the other, small little segments, you guys pretty much hit on everything else I was thinking.
Karrion Kross defeats Desmond Troy, the former Denzel Dejournet, in 1 minute and 5 seconds. We got a couple of hype segments for Karrion Kross throughout the night. Doomsday is coming again, he says, because that's what it is. We didn't know when Karrion Kross came back. We talked about Karrion Kross possibly coming back as a babyface, and we talked about him possibly coming back in with a different entrance and with Scarlett maybe being different and that kind of stuff. But they came back and he's essentially doing the same act, but we don't know where he's going to go. When he left, we of course said he'll come back feuding with Ciampa and all that. And Ciampa's not necessarily in that place anymore. It's very easy to say when somebody gets injured that they'll come back and everything will be the same. And it's not. So it's going to be very interesting to see where Karrion Kross fits in. Paul Diem emailed us. Hey gents, I thought this was a strong show overall tonight. Calming down some of the fast for fast sakes action and focusing more on storytelling. Good stuff. Couple of thoughts. Pick from them as you see fit. Number one, Ciampa looked great, but Russ certainly made a name for himself. Plus, Bivens getting involved. Count me in. Number two, O'Reilly versus Dunn. Yep. Inject that straight into my veins. That's the kind of match, with the selling especially, that I love. Add to the action the fact that either man could have logically won, but I was still surprised by the outcome. Nice piece of booking. Number three, the Xia Li story has grown on me. I'm intrigued by how they've shot these, especially with the level of brutality, but also how far back this story has gone. This has a slow build starting a few months back. Intrigued to see how this finally plays out. Number four, I'm into the Kross act for the most part, but I have to say I've never wanted to look away from a gorgeous woman more. Scarlett can turn to take it down 10 or 20 notches. Sometimes way less is more. Right now she's the very definition of indicating. Be well, everyone. Paul in Baltimore. Paul has messaged us before, certainly in the days before Nate was here, and we know that he knows acting, and so Tom and I have talked with him about some of that. Scarlett does indicate a little bit. She overacts. She is she's part of a different world. So she's not someone who's going to be in feature films, but Scarlett has worked as a burlesque actor, and there are different rules there and a different level of reality, if I may. And so I offer a longer leash for what I believe in terms of acting, but it's a lot, and they put her in really high concept clothing and gear, and that all adds to what looks like a really, really overwrought act. And I get that some people won't totally love it, but for me, because it is still part of getting over the Karrion Kross act, it's okay, and I will be watching closely over the next few weeks, Dom.
Yeah, I it doesn't bother me. You're right. It's, I mean, nail on head. It's burlesque, and I interpret her as like acting in a music video, and that's what she's going for, and I feel like she's succeeding. We said the first time we saw it that the entrance is very cinematic, and yeah, we wondered if it would stick around to where you've actually got real fans in the audience. And obviously, you know, this setup is not traditional, but this is the first time that the Karrion Kross entrance has been performed in front of real fans. And that just made it all the funnier to me that during the little, I don't even know what to call it. There is a moment where they are posing together, where the entrance has already crescendoed and now the music has died back down a little bit and they're just posing there. And I remember when the last time Karrion Kross did that at TakeOver XXX, and you can, it's like insert crowd reaction here. And I hate sounding like I'm advocating for the fake crowd noise, because I despise the fake crowd noise that they've been doing, because they use like WrestleMania level noise when the fans are just standing there idle. But at TakeOver, that big moment happens, and he gets a little bit of a golf clap. And tonight, real fans there. Same thing. A little bit of a golf clap. Just sort of awkward. I also thought it was maybe a dubious choice to put him up against Desmond Troy, trying to remember Denzel Desjardins' new name. Of course, I've liked Denzel for a long time, but I mean, Kelly, you and I have hung out. You know, I'm what, 6'1", 6'2". I don't know whether I'm 6'1" or 6'2", because, you know, different scales say different things. I've had a back injury that changed that.
Yeah. You either have me by 2 inches or three. I get it. You're tall.
Right. And I wasn't even planning on focusing on that, but I'm remembering the times that I'm looking at Denzel in the ring and I'm like, oh man, he's actually pretty big. But then I'm remembering back to the times that I've been next to Denzel and I'm like, wait, what, weren't we more eye to eye? But anyway, I didn't even intend to go down that tangent. My mind went there because I feel like we're supposed to view Cross as a big guy, and they've got him in there with someone who looks like he's taller than him. I felt like Denzel had an inch or two on Cross. Now, we've seen Cross go up against Bronson Reed, Keith Lee. You know, part of the appeal is seeing him do that Saito suplex to guys who are as big or bigger than him. So I get that, but I felt like, because also being a big dominant guy feels like it's supposed to be part of the act, and maybe I'm missing the mark there, but it feels like that's supposed to be it, that they would have put him in there with someone at least smaller than Denzel. But yeah, I mean, here I am nitpicking like crazy over this whole thing and joking about it, but I'm, you know, glad that Cross is back. I'm high on the act. I do think it's weird that he's not coming back as a babyface. And I think they're swimming upstream a little bit with that, but I think that I'm still on, again, scratching my head about the Kyle O'Reilly thing, because that does add intrigue that I did not expect to be injected at this point, but I am still on the Cross is going to just like rip that belt right back away from Balor first chance he gets train.
Karrion Kross over Desmond Troy in 105 with the Cross jacket. Nate.
Yeah, this, so again, I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to add either after this. You know, there's not a whole lot here, I guess, to talk too much about. But, you know, I agree with Tom. I think this was kind of an interesting choice size-wise. I kind of had a lot of the same thoughts there. You know, because Cross is somebody that I do feel like he's a lot bigger than he actually is. You know, I don't know if he hits a 6 feet mark or not. I think if he does, it's just barely. But he doesn't, you know, he's somebody that does kind of feel like he should be coming across bigger than he is, or at least it's the way they're trying to portray him. So I thought it was an interesting, you know, an interesting choice there. I'm okay with him kind of coming back and doing the same type of things that he was doing before, you know, same entrance and kind of all of that. I think he wasn't really around long enough for his act to go stale, as far as I'm concerned anyway. Yeah, so I think, you know, all of that, the presentation and all of that, I'm still on board with. I do agree Scarlett does kind of overact there. I didn't realize she had a, you know, background in burlesque. That definitely, you know, it explains a little bit of it there. But, you know, it kind of actually explains a lot of, you know, her overall gimmick, you know, through the years, or gimmicks through the years, actually. But still, you know, I do think she could probably dial it down a little bit. I wasn't nearly as impressed with Cross tonight as I have been. There was a couple times where, you know, for example, he whipped Desjardins or Troy. He ripped, you know, under normal circumstances, I would never remember Denzel Desjardins. Now I can't remember Desmond Troy. But he whipped Troy into the corner. And he started laying in like some forearms, and they just didn't connect. They didn't look intense like you expect out of Karrion Kross. There were just a couple things like that I noticed that, I don't know, maybe bad camera angle or whatever, but he didn't come across to me as nearly as intense as he did his last run. Maybe, you know, ring rust, whatever. I don't know. We'll see a little bit. You know, this is just his first time back, but I still have high hopes for him, and I think obviously he's still NXT title bound. These are just really small little nitpicks, but you know, overall I'm still high on him. You know, Scarlett, I really like this act, so I think it's got a pretty high ceiling overall. May not necessarily be for everybody, but I like it. I like what they got going on.
Tonight, The Way, the new faction, The Way, were in two separate matches. Everybody but Candice LeRae and her broken arm wrestled tonight. So the two matches we haven't talked about are the opener, Leon Ruff and Kushida against Johnny Gargano and Austin Theory, and then a match, Shotzi Blackheart versus Indy Hartwell. Shotzi seems to be feuding with the entire faction, and they are they're talking about that. And then Ruff and Kushida, obviously Ruff had his issues with Gargano. Kushida added himself into the match, said, "I'm going to be your partner" last week. Kushida definitely stuck in that spot where he got pushed. He won a few matches, and now it seems like they don't know what to do with him. So he was an add-on to a match where he was not the story. And if I didn't cover this show and do this for the Torch, I don't know that I would remember. But he was in this match. Ruff and Kushida lose to Gargano and Theory. Theory beats Leon Ruff with a pump handle flatliner, more or less, in 1334 as the opener. And then much later in the show, Shotzi Blackheart beats Indy Hartwell in 4:04 by disqualification. The Shotzi versus Indy match is one of the roughest, worst matches I've seen on NXT in a really long time. The worst one still probably is Santana Garrett versus Tainara Conti. That was really, really bad, and really stagey. This one had a lot of benchmarks here where it seemed like timing was off, and I even doubted that the disqualification was supposed to happen. I thought maybe the referee saw something he wasn't supposed to, because timing wasn't what it was supposed to be. The tag match at the opening of the show was just fine. Perfectly good face versus heel tag stuff, with the heels obviously going to win because of what the story was here. Theory. They got Theory doing these dopey puns, which is too bad, because Theory's really good on the mic and he doesn't have to subject himself to that. But whatever, I think he'll probably shine in whatever he has to do. So on these other two matches, Nate, what did you think?
Which two matches are we talking about here? I was kind of reading through my notes, despite thinking you were going to Tom first.
This guy, the only two matches we didn't talk about, Ruff and Kushida against Gargano in Theory, Shotzi versus Indy.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to start with Indy and Shotzi. I think this was, it was okay. Wasn't the greatest match in the world, but it was okay. Like you said a little bit ago, Shotzi's kind of feuding with the whole stable here. It was nice to kind of see that interaction at the very, at the tail end of the match, where you kind of had Theory and Gargano, louting over her, taunting her with the broken trophy. And, you had, LeRae and Indy kind of, stomping away at her and stuff. It's kind of a, good visual, good heat building visual for The Way, this new stable here. The match, like I said, the match is okay. I'm not a huge fan of like DQ finishes and things like that. I think it worked here because it did, add to that heat building and things like that. It kind of showed that it wasn't about the win. It was more about taking out, taking out an opponent. The weapon bump there with the trophy, she did it right in front of the referee, but it was obviously when the referee was just turning around. So it's like, it kind of looks like it was supposed to be quote an accident that she got caught, if you will, trying to cheat. But still, kind of like the vibe that I got that was like, you know, okay, we don't care about the win. We just care about taking Shotzi down, taking her out, which, you know, if that is the way, the story they were telling, that was the way I took it anyway. I like that. You know, it's kind of just, you know, this cutthroat, ruthless, like, hey, this is what we're doing. Even if it was by accident, you know, like, quote, it was an accident. And, you know, even in the story, it was an accident. And, you know, that's just kind of the way it went down. I liked, you know, kind of like that. But like I said, you know, it was not my favorite match of the night, but I do like the story that they're building there with it. As far as the opener went tonight with Kushida, Ruff, Gargano, and Theory, this is a fun tag match for me. I don't think it was certainly wasn't the highlight of the night with, you know, the other things that we had talking about earlier in the night, but Ruff continues to impress me. He was bumping around all over the place tonight. He really looked good. He even got some offense in, you know, a little more offense than I expected. I don't know how much longer they're going to have him in this high profile of a spot, but I'm kind of enjoying the ride right now. I wouldn't say he's ready for the main event right yet. He kind of feels like he still needs some growing to do. Not literally. I'm talking, you know, he's a small guy. I don't mean literally. But, he still gets some learning to do, especially, you know, with some of his mic skills, things like that. But for right now, I'm kind of enjoying it almost. And I really hate to make the comparison to James Ellsworth. I really do. But there are some comparisons that can be drawn there. Originally I thought the Ellsworth thing was cool. Very quickly I soured on it. So this is a little bit different. You know, it's still an underdog story, but I kind of feel like it's kind of that same type of scrappy underdog character. I feel like in a way they move similarly. I get kind of a lot of, I do draw a lot of comparisons between the two, but and I don't, you know, it's not a bad thing. In my eyes anyway, it's a good thing. But I do like what they're doing with him. And I like Gargano and Theory right now. They're playing some great heels. They're doing their job really well. I think they're, you know, some of the best stuff on the show. And then lastly, Kushida here, you know, he kind of feels almost like a treat when we get to see him wrestle, because we get to see him wrestle so infrequently. I thought it was a bit of a disappointment that we started the show in the midst of his entrance. We've talked about it before on the show. Like, I personally like to see a full entrance, you know, unless it's for a jobber or something like that. I want to see a full entrance for somebody, because, like, you know, that's where you start to connect with the audience. You know, like, for example, I'm a huge video game guy. I love playing WWE video games. I spend more time creating my entrance than I do playing the friggin' game sometimes. And it's because I like that. I like the cinematics. I like the theatrics of it. And I feel like the entrance is really where you start to connect with the audience. And coming in, you know, right in the middle of the entrance, especially where there's not a large studio audience right now, it's a very small audience. You don't get that extra time to kind of connect with them. So I don't know. I wish that's something that they weren't doing right now. It was a bit of a shame that we didn't get a full entrance for him and Ruff. But as I was saying, it felt like kind of a treat tonight to watch him wrestle. You know, he got some cool spots in here. I think he kind of played off of Ruff pretty well. Overall, you know, I enjoyed it. I still kind of am continuing to like this whole Leon Ruff saga here. Haven't soured on it yet. And I think if they play their cards right, they can get at least a few more weeks out of it. So.
All right, Tom, where are we going without ever knowing the way?
Oh, boy. Indy and Shotzi was such a bummer, man. I've said over and over again that Indy is someone that I've believed in, and neither wrestler was good in this match, but Indy she looked like she was lost. Her side of it looked like a training match where she was purposefully not laying stuff in, because it's a training match. You don't want to hurt Shotzi. And she, by the end of it, you know, after the disqualification finish, she was just standing there like a lost puppy, not even kicking Shotzi, just sort of like looking at Candace, like, what do I do now? Really, really unfortunate to see. So I hope that it's not an anchor, that they don't look
at
that and they're just like,
I trust you implicitly. So when she was as she was, I was just like, there must be something about the lights, the bright lights, that does something to her. Because I know you have never been wrong when you said this person has a lot of upside or none on this show. It was unfortunate because I want her to succeed so much.
Yeah, it was very, very bad. And like her personality, I like that she's at least getting if there's anything I like about this, and it's what I liked about last week's segment as well, is she's at least getting little windows to show her personality here and there. And I think that's one of the more winning things about her. So please, NXT, if the train is going off the rails here, the indie rails, at least keep her as a manager or something. I don't know. Here I am doom crying. It was that bad. Big bummer there. And gosh, I am just so sorry. I was so nice to Mr. Ruff on TakeOver. He saved up all of his quality and gave it to us on that Sunday night. But while I genuinely enjoyed what the other three wrestlers in the opening match brought to the table tonight, Leon Ruff is just not good. There were more than a handful of times where he was completely off target of what he was supposed to be doing. And I'm not even talking about slipping off of the ropes to the outside. That happens to everybody. Unfortunate to see. But this was just like throughout the entire match, he was off target, not laying stuff in. And that's not a size comment. That's just, he's not laying stuff in.
I'm only going to interject because I like Leon Ruff a lot, but it was a really, really bad night for Leon Ruff.
Yeah, it was just so blatant that almost every single thing that he did, he needed the obvious cooperation of the other wrestler to carry it along. If I hadn't had a week to think about it, I'd probably be along your lines of thinking, Kelly, regarding Kushida. Since they teased this last week with him replacing Priest, I was thinking, ooh, this is where he's going to get a North American title match and either win or at least look good in defeat and look like he should have won if it weren't for Austin Theory interfering. So I was optimistic, but yeah, he wasn't involved in the finish. He was the least important of the four people in the ring. So that was weird. We may still be on track to Kushida versus Johnny, but tonight did not seem to indicate that. The other little detail I noticed here was before the match even started, or as it was starting, Vic Joseph is looking at the trophy, and maybe I heard him wrong, but it sounded like he said, Beth, it looks like Ruby or Lyric could have put that thing together, commenting on how bad the trophy looks. And I'm like, come on, give her kids some credit. I'll bet Ruby and Lyric could, at least Lyric, the older one, could do something better than that. Just sticking a doll on top of a Little League trophy. My goodness.
Yeah. And what a weird way to whatever.
Such an aside.
Yes. Punch him in the head. Okay, so so I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. And I like NXT. I like tonight's episode of NXT, and I can't wait to see where they're going because it seems like they found their pace, they found their lane, and hopefully they can put something together weird with this New Year's Evil. The host being Dexter Lumis, who knows? The only thing we didn't really get to was Grizzled Young Veterans, in a backstage segment. James Drake knows how to talk. Did you know? You know now.
Yeah, that caught me off guard.
Yeah. Oh my God. It threw me because I've seen every episode of NXT UK and that threw me huge. Not only does he know how to talk, he kind of can deliver a promo. It was short. It was sweet. It was by the numbers, but it was good stuff. So, James Drake, thank you for talking. So weird. And I wish when you had talked that Zach Gibson's head had literally exploded because he couldn't believe that his partner was talking. Blow up on screen. That's what should have happened. Anyway, Tom, who are you?
I am at Tom Staupe. And what surprised me about that was that when James Drake opened his mouth, he wasn't talking about throwing a towel over Miss Kitty. Bad joke. I was between that or a Jay and Silent Bob one, and I picked that one.
You picked the better one.
Okay, all right. I do hope that people are going VIP and listening to NXT 8 years back on Saturdays because it is a very fun show to do, and I believe it is a fun show to listen to as well. Kelly and I have another good one in the can for you this coming Saturday.
We do indeed. We are continuing the feud of Usos versus Ascension, a feud that started before the beginning of time and will end after the end of time. It is the longest feud ever, and it is still going on. And good stuff on 8YB. Nate, who the hell are you?
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I write the NXT hits and misses, which I'll be posting in the morning. So check that out when I do. And if you want to check out my YouTube channel, Deej Time, DEGETIME, where we take a look at role-playing games and form of therapy, do that. Check it out because, you know, it's cool and fun and stuff and therapeutic.
Well said. All right. We will see you in about 7, folks, as we lean toward New Year's Evil. Cheers. All right.